I think that there's a conspiracy theory to be created here. Who do you think at Apple wants to stop this from happening? I think that what happened is that you are aware that Apple has basically, you know, been trying to have a tighter control over their message, and they had Jon Stewart, you know, on a podcast, and then they were asked to you know, not talk to somebody. There were some details about it. I can't remember. Maybe I can track it down. But I think something similar is happening here, because the folks at Apple heard that you think that Apple is evil, and that's why this is happening.
So because the folks at Apple think I'm evil, they've stopped FaceTime working on my Mac, but it will still work on my phone.
Exactly. Mm. Because they figured that that was the secret, you know, that was the easiest way to throw us off in our investigative journey.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. I think they could have, that sounds like a technical solution to something. They could have just said.
They just could have said squirrel.
Yeah, and that would have been it. We'd have been there. Oh. So we've not spoken for a couple of weeks, have we? Because I've been sat in emergency rooms and I can't remember. I think it's been mainly my fault. But now yes. You're broadcasting. You know, you've John, gone above and beyond. You're not at home. You're not in your own residence or office. But you are still dedicating yourself to the calls from the East Coast this time. So
my devotion.
Thank you that you yes. are. So dedicated to inflicting pain upon our listener.
Well, you know what? I guess I'm feeling in a little bit of a nostalgic mood today. And I thought it would be helpful to say some thank yous and to have some recollections. And then I have a technical topic I would like to begin talking about and maybe take it a little bit further. How about that?
That almost sounds, John, like you've been thinking about this.
I have been thinking about it. So, I mean, the part of the reason why I'm having a little bit of nostalgia is that there's a dear friend and colleague of mine who is leaving the company, and we have this ongoing joke about his name is Ben, and we have this ongoing joke about Ben's mom, which of course made me recall the whole shtick with Graham's mom back at NS Conference. So I had to go track down photos. So it took me down memory lane. So that's part of why I'm feeling nostalgic today. But then I realized that there were some mentions that you know, at the end of this you know, so-called podcast, we regularly say, so if you'd like to talk to us, and people have been talking to us, and you know, I have been remiss in not thanking them for doing so. So, I mean, to, you know, Michael Curtis, who's been a reliable fractional listener, who I once met in London, one day we'll meet again, because he, despite his cranky exterior, is actually a friendly person. There was that. But then also, you know, a fellow under the name Martini Cat, the inimitable George Gurton. I hope I didn't mispronounce that. But then I was curious about that because he was very kind. He you know, made reference to a series of experiments that were had at Stevens University, where, you know, Stevens Institute, rather, where my child goes to school in the physics lab. And I was actually there last week, and I forgot to go hunt that down, but I will do that next time I'm there. But I spied on this person, and if I'm not mistaken, this person is, you know, wrote the control software for the original Lin drum machine, which is pretty spectacular if you ask me, because that's quite an achievement. That's real software engineering, not the crap that we do, considering that I imagine it had to be written in 8088 assembler, and without the Lin drum machine, how much music would never have existed. So that was kind of cool. And then a fellow named Abe White got in touch with us and was telling us about some software that he's been working on called Skip Tools, which is kind of interesting, and maybe we'll have to kind of revisit our "we're too lazy to have guests" policy, because do you want to hear about it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, after he got in touch, I did go and have a look, and it looks quite interesting. And so, go ahead. But if we can get him on, that will be that'll be good. If we can coordinate three schedules, I mean, if we can really, you know, put that much effort into the show, then, you know, our listener that week will really deserve some pain.
That's true. Well, I mean, the gist of it is it's trying to solve the how do you build cross-platform mobile apps without kind of having too big of an abstraction layer. And the reason I suspect that it may possibly be in reaction to me having talked about the Hack Day project that I worked on, or helped my child and his teammates work on. So he built an application, mobile application called DuckDash, which they're still working on slowly but surely. But the gist of it was is something that would allow people, students, to basically do favors for other students, to be able to say, hey, I'm already picking up my food here. Here's how I can find food that other, my colleagues, my classmates may have ordered, and then it is located, at the same place I'm going to, because it's my dorm or I'm going to a classroom, whatever. So it's a pretty simple app. And as I was saying, it was the first app that I'd ever worked on where I did file new project on 100% Swift UI app. And the back end was the Parse application server, which you were kind enough to refresh my memory about. And when we were talking about it, one of his colleagues, who's actually a computer science major, said, well, wait, are we going to build an iOS-only app? And I said, well, I don't know anything about Android apps, and I don't really think a web app wouldn't quite do it, and I don't want to do React Native. And that was what he'd proposed. So, but Skip Tools is kind of interesting because it says you can build 100% Swift UI app on iOS in Xcode, and by changing some of the build tools or adding some build processes and some, including some frameworks, it will generate Kotlin code using the Compose, basically translates Swift UI to Compose, and it bundles some code with the Android app. So it is true that, from what I've understood, that both the APIs for Compose and Swift UI are quite similar, and the languages between Swift and Kotlin have many similarities. So it makes sense for me. I haven't tried it myself, but I had a look. But I told my son's teammate on this, and he was actually he'd never heard of it, and he said that actually looks really interesting, because there are more than a few mobile software engineers who kind of like Apple's tool chains, but for various reasons want to be able to have some way to reach Android. And this used to happen with Mac and Windows or Mac and web, and so we're talking about the same thing that we've talked about for quite some time now, and this is kind of the latest chapter of it. But I will leave it at that. It piqued my interest, and what was nice about it is that it had enough documentation and help that even an idiot iOS developer who's only used comfortable with Xcode could probably figure out how to get the Android simulator and tool chain up and running, because they were kind of kind enough to have in their tutorials some information about how to do that. So I was intrigued. So Abe, maybe we'll try and figure out how to make this happen, if you're listening, if you are one of the additive fractional listeners this week.
It would be really shit for him if it was his turn to listen this week and all we did was talk about what he told us about in the first place. It would be like, yeah, really good value for money. I've looked at the website, and I've watched some of the tutorial videos, mm-hmm. Not actually downloaded or tried it or anything, but it does look interesting. Perfectly honest, these tools, the question, there'll always be, it says quite openly in there that you can always dig into the Kotlin and change it yourself and do whatever else, because it's generating code. So the question is always going to be with these tools, at what point do you need to get involved? How far does the out-of-the-box experience go? That's not a criticism, that's a fact of life. If you're trying to do anything that's, the reality is you're trying to do half the work. Right. So this thing is trying to do the other half for you. The reality is, unless you're doing very, very simple things, well, not very, very simple things, unless there's often going to be a case where it just can't do the other half of the work for you or something about it, and you have to dig in. So, I guess the usefulness of the tool or for any particular project is, where is that line for you? If that line is like at the 10% mark, then maybe you just need to write both. If that line is at the 90% mark, then, it's a no-brainer. So it'll be interesting to see if we can get Abe on and have a chat about it and just learn a little bit more. But no, it was interesting, and Abe, thanks for getting in touch.
Yeah. All right, Scotty. Well, now you can tell us if you've been busy and distracted, so maybe you don't have things, maybe you're not able to tell us that, you've bought a new tractor from the proceeds of Moneywell,
we've had our first full month of renewals. Because if you remember last year, we launched MoneyWell sometime in March, and we offered 30 days of, you know, a $10 annual subscription for the first year. And it's normally going to be $49.99. So this was our first real test of who was going to renew. It's a little bit of an artificial test because the reality is the majority of the people who would have bought that first $10 subscription would have been people who were using the old version of MoneyWell. And as we've discussed many times, the app hadn't been updated for years. And so these were people who were diehard MoneyWell people. You know, they were going to come along. And the fact is, if they'd been using the old software for lots of years without any updates, then the reality is they're probably going to have carried on using it this year. But still, we didn't know. We haven't done any detailed analytics on it yet, but it's looking like we had a renewal rate in the mid-70%, which is better than I thought it was going to be honest. I guess now the real test is the next 6 months, because outside of that initial batch of people who bought in at the $10, this is probably now all new people coming on board. And I'm going to expect this to be a lot lower. We have a huge onboarding problem in MoneyWell, that you get suddenly faced with this screen and no idea what to do with it, no idea how to go with it. And it's quite a complicated app, and we've discussed this lots of times before, so I won't discuss it again now, other than it's something I'm working on at the moment, which I might discuss in a moment. So I guess the next 2 or 3 months will be a more accurate reflection of our renewal rates and how many people are actually sticking around. I mean, obviously, we've got the issue as well. Lots of people start to come to a budgeting app with good intentions. And many of us start many things with good intentions and we don't carry on. I mean, and I'm a good example myself. I bought an annual subscription to a piano teaching app 18 months ago. It did renew 6 months ago, but I probably haven't really used it hardly at all. And so I'm not likely to let that renew again. But I set out with good intentions of learning the piano is good for someone my age, it's good for your brain, it's good for your dexterity and all the rest of it. But I guess there is the hope that I might keep it running, because there is the hope I might go back to it. And so maybe we'll have some of that with MoneyWell as well, because I still think I want to still take up the piano. And I'm sure there's people out there who still want to do their budgeting. And so maybe we'll stick with it, but we'll see. Anyway, that's a very long way of saying I think the next 6 months will be a more accurate reflection.
Well, Scotty, I have two things to
say. Of where we're at.
I have two things to say. One is that we now have our show title, which will be the Road to Hell.
Yeah.
Which is an accurate description under all circumstances. But the second one, this reminds me of, you know, y'all know that I'm a raging Stuart Copeland fan. And, you know, he's been doing a series of I guess what he's doing is slicing up a program that he'd done for the BBC, which is not available in the United States, which is basically recollections of his career. And there was one segment which I really liked, which was when they were touring in America and their album, something had hit finally. And then they got a call from their record label that essentially said that they're rich now, you know, and that they were in Manny's Music. You know, they went to Manny's Music, which is this amazing music shop in New York, and then they bought, you know, one of everything they could have possibly imagined. And he talked in particular about how, you know, he got a Roland, you know, an Echoplex. And that was when he started, you know, miking, you know, passing the output from his snare and bass drum mic and hi-hat mic through an echo. And that really kind of became a part of his signature sound. So the reason I say that now is like, well, now it seems like, you know, Apple have called and told you you're rich. Relatively speaking, I want to know, did you go to the local kind of farm supply store and say, I would like a full sack of chicken feed?
Let's just say our month. Of course, this is Apple, so we haven't received the money yet. We'll get it sometime. Oh, okay, yeah. Sometime in the next 2 years. Not quite that bad. Let's just say yes. Our income from the month will be a lot higher than it has been, but it's a one-off, and it's still definitely not the sort of money that makes us be able to give up the contracting or anything else yet. Long, long ways to go. I may have had an extra drink in the bar, but that was probably about it. There we are. I wasn't at Stuart Copeland level yet.
Okay. Well, that I believe in you, Scotty, and I think that will happen one day, but I do want to see the video of you just going to the farm supply store and picking out one of everything. Yeah.
I will go to one of our many local farm supply stores and see. I'll go to the smallest one, maybe one that only sells one thing, and I'll pick out one of everything.
Okay. You'll get a new pair of boots or something.
And what have you been up to then? I mean, you're traveling at the moment, but I'm assuming you're still working.
I am still working, and people are going to hate me increasingly because some new directives have come down to talk about confidentiality and kind of. So I am going to probably be more and more careful these days. Not that I haven't said or revealed any trade secrets or anything like that, but The project I'm working on, have been working on for a year now, is going into its second QA allocation, which is good. So we can kind of see how things are going. But I think it probably won't be noticed in the press or kind of talked about widely until it goes to a more full allocation. Because at various times when we run QA tests, sometimes it gets picked up oftentimes gets picked up in the press. So we'll see. So I can only say that, but I did have some news, which was, I think, is super important, and I'm sure that will make you very happy personally. Guess who won a golden ticket to WWDC?
Oh, you did.
Yes.
Well, Joe, there we are.
I did.
You are little Charlie.
I know, I couldn't believe it. I am little Charlie, and after all these years of applying and never hearing back, and I was convinced it because it used to be either that I was too unimportant as an indie or too hated as a established fat, dumb, and happy corporate developer. But yes, who knows? Maybe it is random. But one other colleague got one, so I'm kind of looking forward to it. But it'll be interesting to see how it feels. And also, vicious rumor seems to be true that there will be another James Dempsey performance. So that's happy making. And I realize it's not that far off because now we're having to organize rehearsals.
Yeah,
this is definitely like the music show. This episode.
So that's going to be interesting because obviously neither of us have ever been to Dub Dub since they went. They started this form of it. Is this their third year or only their second year of having people in the theatre and I can't remember. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And as I think we spoke about last time a couple of weeks ago, there's going to be more, there's definitely more people talking about just going to the San Jose area for that week. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to hearing how it goes down, which, as I think I also said last time, so I don't want to put myself, I have very little enthusiasm about the event itself.
you're so mean, Scotty. I'm still kind of like, I'm almost ready to open up the show by saying, could you please show me on this doll where Tim Apple hurt you?
I've said this already. I'm going to say it again, though. But it's like, I just think we're going to have like 200 Vision Pro sessions. And as much as the technology is cool and I think is a great device, and only by having devices like this come along will the future become a reality, I just have no developer interest in it right now. And the sort of things, in my work, I need to see. They're fairly dull, they're fairly boring, they're fairly just like incremental improvements or how is this going to work? And firstly, I'm not convinced we're going to get too much of that is sessioned. My fear is the Mac is just going to almost disappear from the conference altogether. It's a fear. I hope they prove me wrong. I think, as I've said before, let's say Dub Dub normally has 200 sessions. you know, if they come along this year and do 120 sessions on Vision Pro, but still only do 200 sessions, I'll be very disappointed. If they do 120 sessions on Vision Pro, but this year are 300 sessions, then everybody's a winner. Well, so let's see.
Scotty, I'm going to make a bold prediction. You know how at some point, I think, you know, Steve Jobs likened, you know, the Mac, I think, to like a pickup truck or something like that, or a truck in general. And the iPhone is kind of like a car. Like, everybody has a car, but some people need trucks for specialized things, for construction or work, or to get a Starbucks from a drive-through in suburbia. I think what's going to happen is they're going to go on stage and they're going to have a silhouette of a tractor. And they're going to say, what the hell is this all about? Well, this is two things. One is that this is our personal reach out to Scotty in East Bollockshire to say that we see you. And we care about you, and we think that the Mac and developers for the Mac is, you know, the Mac is the new tractor, and Mac developers are the new Gloucester farmers, something like that.
This is a case of I'm accepting the Mac's time is limited. It's going to be around for a long time yet, because I can't really see how Xcode ends up on the iPad only for a while. I mean, it's going to go that way, and the iPad will become the developer tool at some point, but it's a little way off yet. And I think that's not even necessarily now because of processing power, because you can have additional screens, and, you know, it runs the M1 or the M2 or the M3 processor. So I don't think there is it's perfectly possible to have an iPad Xcode as improved, but it's just the Xcode is such a big beast that getting it across to that UI format and making it usable is a long job, and I'm not sure how they're going to do that. Are we going to get some sort of new cut down tool that will gradually grow over time? Are they going to do like what they did with the iMovie or Final Cut Pro, where you just get this new tool that only contains 10% of the old tool, but eventually it will build up? Or are we going to wait one day in however many X number of years? And they could have been working on this for 10 years, for all I know. It's just going to happen. So I'm accepting the Mac has a lifetime. However, they still make shitloads of money from the Mac, so they're not just going to get rid of it for the sake of it, I don't think. But as a developer who still wants to, you know, and I accept the iPad and the iOS of the future for almost every application, not going to go over that. However, I want to, you know, embrace the idea of the Mac still while it's around. But, you know, when Apple give you so little direction, that's quite hard to know how to do it. I mean, you know, we have native Mac apps, we have Catalyst Mac apps, we have multi-platform Swift UI apps, and all of them have a tinkling of love, and then you don't hear anything else, or there's such minor improvements over a year that, you know, it's, you know, Apple are never going to announce long-term plans. They just don't. So we've got to look, you know, what we need to do is look in the sessions, look in the what's new in AppKit, what's new in Cocoa, or whatever they call them these days, and just try and pick up a direction of, you know, if we're making a major investment of time going forward on supporting platforms, you know, we're a small company. We can't invest a year of our lives into something that then just isn't there anymore, because that would ruin us. Whereas, you know, for a company like Netflix, it would have financial implications, but it's not going to put the company out of business or anything like that. I'm just looking for Apple to give us some clarity. And I don't even need lots of new things. I just want clarity that this is a platform that you should be developing for, and this is the way you should be doing it. And that's it. That's what I'm looking for. And I'm just not convinced I'm going to get it. Not, well, you know, in any way at all. It's not sexy. It's not flashy. But we'll see. We'll see. And that's why I'm really getting very unexcited about everything else, because, you know, there's enough stuff that I haven't used yet on iPad and iOS that can still keep me excited. And I am excited about iOS and iPad development. And anything that new that comes along in Swift UI this year will be nice and all the rest of it. But this the bigger strategy is, it just puts a bit of a cloud over everything. But anyway, I said I wasn't going to say it again. I've just said it again. So Now I'll shut up. Well, go back to your golden ticket. Sing us a song. I've got a golden ticket. And, who's going to be your Grandpa Joe? Who are you going to drag out of bed and take with you?
I wish I could take somebody with me, but not possible. And I told the foul child, and he was like, "Wait, hold on a second. I'm like minutes away from being a better engineer than you. Why don't I get one?"
Did he apply for one?
No, he didn't. So that's the answer.
That's why he didn't get one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why didn't I get this amazing thing? Because you didn't ask for it. It's not difficult, is it?
Well, it'll be soon.
Oh, well, that's going to be good. Have you been into the Steve Jobs Theatre before?
I have. I once went to an investor meeting, and I found that fascinating. And that was many, many years ago. Definitely in the before times. So I am looking forward to that.
Because I think, isn't it Steve Jobs Theatre for the video and then meet the engineers at the visitor centre? Is that the way it works?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I think there's even a welcome reception. I think we may even get a little bit of swag. Oh. I haven't had swag in a long time.
There we are.
Yeah. I'd be like, I don't
know. I found out my WWDC, was it 17, black denim jacket the other day in the back of a cupboard.
Oh, you did?
And I thought, actually...
Is it a collector's edition?
It's actually quite a nice. It's a Levi denim jacket. It's got the WWDC 17 sign on it, but very discreet on it. So it doesn't. You're not like wandering around like being a big advert. So yeah, let's see what swag you get.
target for being a mugging target. That was always the fun thing to
John in his WWDC 24 leotard. We look forward to the photos.
It's going to be like the Borat style monokini. Was that a dog? Was that Barky the failure dog in the background just saying no? Just no.
He's no longer living at the thought of it even. Ah, there we are. So John, I like SwiftUI, but I hate SwiftUI.
No.
Actually, that's not true. I'm just going back to everything is about repeating them. I just have realized I still, even though SwiftUI is really nice, could do some really powerful things, makes development and just seeing what's going on in the previews so much nicer. I just don't like developing UIs. I really don't like it. And I know I've always been like that. And I thought, well, SwiftUI is going to change my mind about that. And it makes it better. And I prefer it. And if I have to do anything, I'd much rather do it in SwiftUI. But I still just don't like doing UI. I mean, when you spend your entire day trying to get three things to line up, get them the right color, get the border the right size, get things just to do that, that just... brings me very little satisfaction. Whereas I know to the next person down the road, that's like amazing. I've produced this visual masterpiece. Not that my UIs are masterpieces anyway, at all. That's pretty shit, to be honest. In there. And I get why people get satisfied, but it's just not for me. But there you are. So I just want to say, SwiftUI, thank you for making my life better, but you're still not good enough.
Oh my God, yours is full of piss and vinegar today. Well, I can complain similarly about, in recent weeks and months, I've been participating in getting rid of some old code and bringing in some brand new code, which is great. It's wonderful. One always likes to do that. You know, I've kind of have to thank the old code for its service. But you come to, I think, in complex, long running code bases, you get to a point where you're kind of stuck in between the two worlds, and you can't just wholesale get rid of everything because you can't really make all the changes in one release cycle, let alone test and validate it. And oftentimes when we're making changes to underpinnings, we just, for sanity's sake, have to run a test to make sure that it at minimum does no harm, hopefully make things a little better. Because generally speaking, if you're going to make changes in code, it's not just for the jollies of the software engineers, but hopefully it makes life better for the people who are using it. And so a thing that has happened over the last couple of years is the big question about how do you do asynchronous programming. In the old world, it was always like do write a method with a completion handler. And then that came over to Swift. And, you know, do you remember the website, you know, what was it? Fucking block syntax or something like that, which have examples about how to write this. And it was adapted. And you know, I became very comfortable with that. And I think, you know, most people have. And then, you know, Apple said, no, the new way and the light is combined. And then in recent years, they said, you know, I think many people have concluded that Apple was just basically psych because we're not doing anything new on it. And async await is the new hotness, except for it's not really new. And I don't know whether it's hotness, but it's basically how Node works. So, you know, JavaScript programmers have been comfortable with this. And the problem that you run into is that if all the functions or all the methods in your call chain it's a lot easier if they're all one or the other. Mixing and matching is kind of difficult. So if you have old Objective-C code, for instance, that may have a completion handler or a delegate, and you want to include that in a graph of tasks which are all async await, that becomes tricky. There are ways of doing it, but that I kind of found myself cursing that a little bit. And then I kind of got pulled down to having to make the decision, do I rewrite more than I wanted to for the sake of making it clean async, you know, methods all the way through or not? And the jury's still out, but have you run into that? I mean, I would imagine that you might could.
Yeah, see, I mean, our code base, some of the code goes back to 2007. There's every, a bit, I think about the only way of doing something of any form that's not in there is probably Apple's very brief foray into garbage collection back in, what was that, 2007, 2008? Yeah, mixing and matching, it gets difficult. It does get difficult. Asynchronous stuff, particularly, mixing like the async await stuff with the old sort of like callback stuff or completion handler stuff. It's all very doable, but it does get more confusing, doesn't it? And knowing what to do it. And sometimes you just got to think, I need to break out that whole stack of this bit in order to do it the new way. But then, as you said, you end up with, yeah, well, actually, I've just ripped this thing out, but actually there's 17 things connected to that. Because as much as we believe in decoupled code, we don't write it very often in the real world. Because it might have been beautifully decoupled when it was first put in, but then everyone just couples it over time. But basically the answer is, John, is every week just start a new app.
I think that's the smart. Well, and
do it the new way.
That's what I realized. That's kind of why I'm feeling a little bit kind of like, you know, torn these days, because for some work that I do, it's like it's all file new project, all blue sky, brand new, you know, APIs, no cruft from the past. And you sail along until you realize that there's something that you still can't do. And then you have to kind of worry about how do you break out and you know, find the solution to the problem. And then in the old world, it's like, this is comfortable. This is understood how this works. And you try to bring new patterns in. And that has its own, you know, sets of problems and challenges. And in the end, I'm kind of reminded by my colleagues, like, well, that's what you get for being a software engineer. You know, like, if you don't like it, take a hike, you know, go be a dirt farmer.
I mean, we have this discussion quite a lot over Moneywell, because it's going to come a point. I mean, there is bits of the code that just need to be ripped out and rewritten. Mm-hmm. Because they are just so, we still have lots of cell-based table views, for example, which is like deprecated for, I don't know, years. I mean, I don't think Apple's going to take them away.
That's been deprecated since Windows 3.1.
Yeah, something like that. So it's, we keep looking and saying, oh, no, it's just too much work. And there will come a point that we'll reach a point of stuff where actually it is better to rewrite the app than it is to try and change that stuff now, because, you know, if Apple ever says we are going to deprecate this now, we'll have the decision. So the question is, at what point do you do that? Now, one of the thoughts we've had is actually you do a bit like we said this just now, the iMovie thing with Apple, where the original iMovie is still available and you keep working on it, you keep adding bits to it, you keep doing it. But you bring out the next version of iMovie with the new interface, and it does 10% of the stuff. But it's just a new app, and you just you just keep building it, and you make a way of, you know, you make data between the two compatible, or transferring data. So anyone who's happy with, at any point, anyone who's happy with the what the new one does can move across to it, and new people take the new one, and you just build it up, because at some point that will just be more efficient than trying to change the old one. But it's not an easy line to know where that is.
Well, speaking about not an easy line, here's a line that we can make easy for our fractional listener. It's like, when should we shut the hell up? And I'm going to, you know,
I think the answer was probably about 20 minutes ago.
We should shut up an hour and a half ago.
About 10 minutes before we started recording would have been the ideal time.
Somebody's building a time machine and going visiting our parents and dispensing birth control.
So, oh, my
well,
word.
Scotty, if people want to invent a time machine and go back to, you know, go back to whenever is necessary to be able to keep you from having the idea of A, having a podcast, and B, making the even bigger mistake of inviting me to join, how might they do that?
John, they can do that on Mastodon, where I am, macdevnet at mastodon.social. I keep going back to developer.social, but that's a server that just died. And John, if people wish to tell you that they wish you just shut the fuck up, where should they do that?
Well, all such friendly invitations can be sent on the friendliest place on earth, Twitter. No, just kidding. Where I'm Djembe, that's Djembe, like the West African drum, Djembe at mastodon.social. And if you want to find me on Threads, I'm merely John Fox. And not literally merely, so, you know, just John Fox. And that's where you can send more interesting suggestions about things we can and should not talk about.
Well, it's no one else may have enjoyed it, but I've enjoyed talking to you, John. And you have safe travels, and I look forward to talking to you again very soon. And for those who have been listening, thank you for listening. And until next time,
you take care to get that time machine working so that you can prevent future pain. The best of 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 the best of